Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen. Worldwide. Podcasting since 2005.
Take it out.
You're listening to Gamer Tag Radio.
Back on the scene.
With your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamer Tag Radio.
Here we go.
Welcome to Gamer Tag Radio, episode 597. This is your host, Danny, and also joining me this week, my weekly co-host, the whole crew. We have Paris in the house.
What's up?
And also Pete.
Yo.
So what's up, guys? Ever since we released this PlayStation 4 Pro roundtable discussion, wow, we've been getting a lot of crazy feedback. A lot of good ones. A lot of debates. A lot of like, fanboy stuff. It's like, oh, I'm so sick of that crap. And but overall, I think people liked our discussion. I think it was good.
I think really good. I think overall people liked our discussion. But look, I got to say something at jump. I just have to, because if I don't, I'll go crazy. So people are like on social media. People are very mad at me because, look, I put my money where my mouth is. I got receipts like Whitney, and I got the play and I got the PlayStation 4 Pro pre-ordered, paid in full. I'm ready for November 10th. People are like mad because I did that. And I will go back and I will just simply say this. Why do you care how I spend my money? I will never understand that. This has nothing to do with Scorpio. This has nothing to do with a PC, PlayStation, whatever. It's like, if I decide I want to get a device, and in my mind it's justified to get it because I have a PC that is my Scorpio, by the way, because people can't wrap their head around the fact that I don't own an Xbox. Really, I do. It's called a PC with Xbox Anywhere, which, you know, as these games start coming out, people will start seeing that. Mm-hmm. But if I want a PlayStation 4 Pro, I'm literally the market that they're targeting. I have a 4K TV. It has HDR. I obviously play games in the PlayStation ecosystem. So why wouldn't I get one? If I can afford to get one, of course I'm going to get one. So I don't understand. Like, there's been people on Twitter that, and I understand disagreeing with me and having a different opinion. That's fine. Yeah, I love that because I love debating and doing all that stuff. But when you spam the same opinion to me 20 times a day, I'm just going to stop responding. Period.
Yeah, what? it gets a little bit creepy.
It gets very creepy because I don't understand why people attached it. And I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Why do you attach yourself to a brand? Why does it matter? If you love Xbox, love it. Get all the games on Xbox you want. Play all the Xbox games you want. The same with PlayStation. The same with PC. Hell, ColecoVision, if you like to get down like that. It don't matter.
And Nintendo too.
Yeah, I know. Nintendo too. But
I love Nintendo.
But the point is, if that's what you spend your money on and that's what you want to play on and that's where your friends are, then have fun. Don't worry about the other guy that doesn't agree with you because he's spending his money on what he wants to spend it on. I will never understand that. It baffles me, you know, and I know fan mail will get into more into PlayStation 4 Pro and some of the questions and all that. But, dude. It's like, relax on social media.
Calm down.
It's not life or death. It's not that serious. It's like, yeah. I promise you, if you talk to some of the higher ups at Xbox or PlayStation or Nintendo, they'll tell you the same thing. It doesn't matter. Play all the systems. Get all the games. You don't have to lock yourself into one. Of course,
why limit yourself, though?
Exactly. Right? It makes no sense to me. It really makes no sense to me. But I just had to say that because, like, matter of fact, let me say this one last thing.
Yeah.
There was a dude, we were having a nice debate about 4K, the rendering, the sampling and all that. And the guy that asked me, he goes, well, have you played a native 4K game? And I'm like, yeah, I played The Witcher 3, you know? And I was like, well, let me take a screenshot of it so you can see on my PC, it actually recommends NVIDIA play it in 4K with these settings, right? I posted that screenshot. You'd have thought I was the devil himself by doing that. Dude's just mad. It was like, how dare you show that you can play that in 4K? You're looking for attention. And I'm like, what?
I go, I'm answering. That doesn't make no sense.
It makes no sense at all. It's like I'm answering a question. It's just silly stuff like that. I'll never understand that, but whatever. Ran off. Keep the angry stuff coming because I love it. All right.
All right. Head over to gamertagradio.com. or play that @ gamertag and listen to our past episodes. You also can find us on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and other podcast directories. Give us a call, 76-273-7GTR. That's 76-273-7GTR. Email us, fanmail@gamertagradio.com, or go to speakpipe.com/gamertagradio. You could also leave a message through there. So we have a lot of fan mails, a lot of questions, and also we have a recording a roundtable recording from Call of Duty XP. We're going to play it later on during this episode of GTR. By the way, episode 600 is coming very, very soon. Working some stuff behind the scenes. We'll see if it happens. Once I get a confirmation, I'll definitely will talk about it a little bit more later on, and hopefully we could get the listeners to be part of this episode. So stay tuned. Another thing too, shout out to Drink Champs, DJ EFN, and Nori. I was hanging out with them during the weekend. Check out their podcast. They're part of the Plate family. Had a great time hanging out with them. And also, we definitely going to be part of their podcast. I think sometime in October. So I'll keep you posted once it happens and everything. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Talk about video games and hip hop. And Pete might be joining us too.
Yep.
Pete,
yep,
right?
Yep. Yeah, man. I go back far. We went to high school with E. So, you know, there's a lot of love there. And you know, shout out to them. Great show.
Yeah. Hell yeah, man. Let's see what else before we go to fam. I know there was a couple more things here. Anything else before we go to fam?
Let's just jump in. We got a lot of fan. We got a lot of email. We got some voicemails. Let's jump right in.
All right, it's time for fan mail.
Fan mail @gamertagradio.com.
Fan mail.
All right, we have a lot of voicemails, a lot of emails. Man. All right, let's go with this one. This one is pretty cool. This is a first-time caller.
Hey, Gamertag Radio, what's going on? My name is Garrett from Washington, Indiana, and this is my first time calling. I started listening to you guys a few weeks before E3, and I stopped gaming during my high school years and just started gaming again just last November. My love and view of the gaming community has really grown, especially knowing the giving of $500,000 from the Destiny community to a local charity. That is just unbelievable and really humbling to hear. I just watched the PlayStation meeting and the unveiling of both gaming systems, and wow, the PS4 Pro is what was expected, 4K, HDR, etc. Now let's talk about the price. $399 is a great deal. However, as a marketing student, I was curious to know if, one, theoretically speaking, would the price have changed if the PS4 Slim was not released? And two, with the PS4 Pro being released holiday season, would we see a price drop of any kind? Or would there just be a bundle option that includes a game or extra controller? Keep up the great work. I'm eager to hear from you guys. Peace.
All right. So first of all, I love what you talked. I talked about like Destiny community raising money. That was pretty awesome too. And I believe it was Paris that brought that up a couple weeks ago. And that's the power of the community, man. Everybody get together. You guys could do amazing, amazing things, man. You know, that's awesome. And, is there going to be any PlayStation 4 Pro deals during the holiday season? I think personally that I probably will see something like a bundle with PlayStation VR or maybe a bundle with a game, something like that. But having the price lower for just the console itself, I just don't see that for this holiday season. What about you guys?
Agreed. They're not going to go under $399. Like you said, they'll just throw a game in, like a digital code for Uncharted 4 or something like that. They'll throw that in and keep it at $399. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I think a bigger question is, do we think this thing is going to be a big seller this holiday? I don't know. I honestly don't know. Like I said, I'm getting one, obviously, but I don't know if the market's going to be out there, because realistically, people that already have a 4K TV and HDR, that percentage is probably small, you know, to say, all right, I'm going to upgrade to go get a Pro. So you're really looking at people that saying, I'm going to get a Pro and I'm going to go get a 4K TV. So that's a lot of coin to spend, you know, all at once during the holiday. So I'll be very curious to see. I really will. I'll be curious to see.
I think the PlayStation 4 Slim is going to sell more than the Pro, man.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
I mean... I also think that the Xbox One S is going to sell a lot of units too. I just don't see just thinking overall, forget about the hardcore gamers, they buy everything, you know, but I'm thinking about the parents, the casual consumers that go to the store Black Friday, they'll see a multiple, you know, consoles and they see $399, $299. They're going to go with the cheaper price, you know?
And
they don't care about the whole 4K thing, man.
Yeah, you know, and I still say, well, see, a little bit, because if you do value for value, Xbox mm-hmm. One S at $299 is the better value because you get more for your money in that same $299 thing. But with that said, I mean, hell, Best Buy right now is doing the new PlayStation 4 Slim, Uncharted, and their new Elite Wireless headset for $299. So I think you're going to see a lot of crazy. I think that's the one thing with them setting the PS4 retail price at $299. You're going to see a lot of crazy deals. Like, you'll probably see the Slim at $250 by itself mm-hmm. during the holidays. And you're going to see some crazy bundles at $299 for that thing, too. And I think a bigger question is, what is Xbox going to do with that One S? I'll tell you one.
It all depends on the market. So they could easily, like how they've been promoting through Twitter and social media, get the 4K Blu-ray player, digital, all this stuff for $299. They could do signs like that and just push it hardcore, like in different retail stores across the country, especially during the holidays. Because remember, their focus is to sell this console during the holidays. Sometime throughout the year is a little bit slow, but when it comes to like September all the way to like December, they really push this console hard, man. And online and during like TV ads. Speaking of TV ads, Paris and Pete, we have to correct ourselves from last week's episode about the whole marketing deal. And I think that was my bad. I messed up. Last week I mentioned that Titanfall 2 had a marketing deal with Sony. And the reason why I said that, everybody has to listen to this, because every time we go to like an event and we play a console, a game in different consoles, most of the time it's because they have a marketing deal. So let's just say a couple years ago, last year when I went to Sweden, Star Wars Battlefront, they were really pushing the PlayStation 4 version a lot. So I was like, okay, this is a marketing deal, which we were correct. There was a marketing deal with Sony and Star Wars. Or let's say this past E3, it was Battlefield 1, mm-hmm. and it was the Xbox One version. And they even had celebrities playing the Xbox One version, everything during E3, and so on. So that right there, they have a marketing deal with EA and Microsoft and EA. But this one, we played, I believe, PlayStation 4 version of Titanfall 2 during E3. So we automatically thought, okay, they have a marketing deal with Sony. And it was incorrect, man, because right after we released that episode, I believe during the NFL game, the first game on Thursday, there was a commercial, Titanfall 2, and it was the Xbox One commercial. So a lot of people were hitting me up about that. And I'm like, wow, I think I messed up on that one, you know? So just wanted to correct myself on that. And that was my bad. So, and I think, Paz and Pete, you guys have more information too that we've been getting.
Well, remember, the other bit of info we got is the reason that with EA Access, the reason that Titanfall 2 isn't a part of that is because Respawn owns the IP and they chose to not be a part of EA Access. Had nothing to do with Sony, you know, pulling it back. So we're way off on everything that we
said
off last week. You know. Oh, and we found out that, yeah, Titanfall 2 will be PlayStation 4 Pro ready on day one when it launches on November 10th.
Awesome. Anything else, Pete? Sorry, I cut you off.
No. That's fine. I'm good. We're good like that. I totally agree with all of our statements.
All right. So should we go with an email before we play another voicemail?
Yeah, let's switch it up. Let's switch it up here.
Okay, go for it. Go for it.
This one is regarding 4K from Karamo. I'm hoping I did not butcher your name, so I apologize if we did advance.
I know who this is, and this is a joke that goes way back into the GamerCast Network days. Just call him Camaro.
Camaro? Okay. All right. This one comes out to Camaro. Thank you for writing in. Hello, guys. Huge fan of the show. Just to note, I started listening when Paris joined. Great fan of the Uncle Gamer radio show. I think Paris might remember me because his beta code for the first Little Big Planet game came from me. Anyways, I wanted to ask, if what I see on screen with a PS4 Pro is the same on a Scorpio, regardless of how it's getting to my screen, what does it matter? I want to know what you all think of this, because I believe 4K is 4K regardless on how it's achieved. Just want to know what PC owners think of this. Danny can chime in too, but I would like to ask him to stop dreaming. There aren't going to be any $350 native 4K. Love the show. Keep up the great work, guys. Thanks for writing in.
All right.
Well, in my opinion, I'm sorry. I'm Danny Jr. again. This is kind of just like I've been talking on social media back and forth with some people the last few days. You know, Quantum Break used the same technology that PlayStation 4 Pro is most likely using to get to 4K, you know, with the rendering. They did that with Quantum Break to get Quantum Break to 1080p on the Xbox One, right? So the question you have to, and look, this is very subjective. Only you can answer this question for yourself. It is strictly based on your preference. If it's 4K on your screen and it looks good, doesn't matter how it got there. Only you can answer that question. None of us can answer that for you. You know what I mean? So the same goes, yeah. Like I said, with Quantum. Like if you play Quantum Break on the Xbox One, if it looked great to you, does it matter that they use some rendering techniques in the background to actually get it to that 1920 by 1080? You know? So the same goes with the PlayStation 4 Pro. And we know that probably the majority of the AAA games that we're going to see are not going to be native 4K. They're going to be, you know, 1440p native, 1800p native, and then they're going to render it up to 4K. Like I kind of said a little bit on the last episode, I watched that Horizon demo and I watched Mass Effect demo in 4K on YouTube, that in 4K. So I got to watch it, you know, not 100% the way they intend, but I got to at least see it in 2160p. It looked fantastic. And this is without HDR. And HDR is going to be that's really the big thing that they're pushing towards, which is why I tell a lot of people, if your 4K TV isn't doing HDR, you need maybe second guess if you necessarily need the Pro right now or even Scorpio. But again, that's subjective and that's up to you. So I don't know. I don't think that's something that we can realistically answer, but I will agree with him on this. Danny, you are freaking dreaming. If you think that Scorpio is going to be 350, there's no way. Impossible.
Why is it? Look, Paris, you know how it is that people hit you up just because you bought your console and, you know, you're ready to play PlayStation 4. I feel the same, man. I have a dream and everybody complains about that. Let me dream.
That gif.
That's it.
That gif we got now that we've been doing on Twitter. Oh, my God. I cry every time.
the sloth.
Yes.
I will say, though, this actually probably ties right into the next voicemail from Jacob. Danny, go ahead and play that since we're talking about 4K and HDR.
Okay, let's play right now.
Hey, what's up, Gamertag Radio? It's Jacob giving you guys a call from Charlotte once again. This call is in regards to the new Point 5 system, you know, the Scorpio and the PlayStation Pro. This is my dilemma. I have a 4K TV, but it's an entry-level 4K TV, so it does not have HDR capabilities. I do have both the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Do you guys think I should upgrade my consoles? Or my TV? What do I do here? Because from what I gathered from the Sony press conference, yeah, I have 4K, but HDR is really, you know, the new thing. And, you know, what do I do? Also, I just bought my TV, like earlier this year. So your thoughts.
All right. Thanks, Jacob, for the voicemail. Your thoughts, guys. Pete?
Actually, this is actually a great segue. This is why I wanted to bring in this audio. People have to understand that HDR and 4K are two separate things. And I know he had a question about, you know, what should he do? I would say check your TV first. If it is, it could be HDR compatible, or it could have a patch that needs to be applied to it. I know my TV, when I got mine in December of last year, did not have HDR out of the box, but 3 or 4 months later, Sony pushed out a patch to support HDR. I know LG has done it. Samsung has done it. I'm not familiar with any of the other TV manufacturers. I'm pretty sure Vizio has. That's more of a Paris question because he's a Vizio fan. So I would check with the manufacturer to see if it's something that can be pushed to support HDR, if not already. So I take that into consideration. Now, as far as which one you should get, again, as we've been saying, do what you and your pocketbook allow. which also doesn't break up your marriage or your relationship at the same time. That's what I would say.
Just to add on to what he's saying, as far as like the Vizio goes, because matter of fact, I plan on getting another Vizio that Vizio P series that does HDR for this very fact. You have Dolby Vision, which is one standard of HDR. And then you have HDR10, which is kind of like the open source HDR. And HDR10 is what the Xbox One does, Xbox One S does, and what the PlayStation 4 Pro does. Here's the thing when it comes to TVs. If your TV already has Dolby Vision, then they can patch in with a firmware update to get to HDR10, which is what the Vizio P series did. Because Vizio P series launched with Dolby Vision, and just recently they patched in HDR10. So it can do both. I know LG also does both with Dolby Vision and HDR10. Samsung, for example, right now, they don't do Dolby Vision. They only do HDR10. So we have to see which standard's going to win. So if you're looking to get a 4K TV now, get one that does Dolby Vision, because then you're safe, you know, for the long term. But if you get one that just does HDR10, but Dolby Vision somehow, some way winds up winning out the standard, you're screwed, because your TV can't be firmware updated to do Dolby Vision. If that's making sense, you know, to what we're talking about. So you got a couple choices. Invest in one that has Dolby Vision right now with HDR10 and you're good to go. Get one that just has HDR10. Cross your fingers that it wins the standard war. Or wait until you see who actually wins the standard war. So like I said, I'm going to get a Vizio P series of 50 inch, because the 4K TV that I have in my office does not do HDR. The one I have out in my living room does. And I want one in my office that does HDR, because that's where I'm primarily going to game on. So I'm going to take the 4K TV I have in my office, kick that into the bedroom, and I'm going to put the Vizio P series here in my office. And that would be my primary driver. So, you know, it's, you know, like he's saying, he already has the 4K TV that doesn't do HDR. Dude, it all depends on your wallet, man, how much disposable income and what you want to spend. I'll say this, if it were me and money was tight, I would just wait, period. I don't necessarily see a reason to get a PlayStation 4 Pro. I'd probably wait it out until Scorpio and just see what happens. At that point, do you want to get a Scorpio? Do you want to get a Pro? Do you want to get both? Whatever. And then make your choice if you feel like you need to get upgrade your TV. Because I think he said he just bought it, right? This year?
Yeah.
Yeah. Earlier this year. Yeah, yeah. I'm not swapping that thing out if I just bought it. Look,
exactly.
Look,
my wife would check with the manufacturer.
Yeah.
Definitely exactly. Check with the manufacturer, because they do have updates that come out as long as it supports it from the back end. Well, does it require 2.0 HDMI?
Or 2.2? It turns out HDR does not require it. You can get HDR, and that's why Sony's able to get away with upgrading the PlayStation 4 to HDR, because all you need is HDMI 1.4 for that. I was doing a little digging.
Is 1.4 the minimum requirement for that, or is it 1.3 or 1.4?
I don't know if it's the minimum requirement, but I know 1.4 supports it, and most modern consoles that you see now, unless you have a super old TV, most of them have 1.4 now anyways, but you can check on your own. You know, that's not something I'm not 100% sure on.
And the Xbox, just so you know, the Xbox One does have both of the consoles, the Xbox One and the PS4, are HDMI 1.4 compatible.
The one, right? Yeah, they're compatible. The One S is 2.0.
Correct.
Yeah.
All right, so this email is from a new listener all the way from Mexico. His name is Don. Hi, I hope you are doing great. You don't need to read this email on the podcast if you don't want to. Sorry about my English. It's not my native language. Well, I'm reading it because it's good to get new, you know, emails from new listeners and stuff. So keep on sending emails, man. New listener, but already a big fan. Keep up the awesome work. Before you start any other podcast, there's already working cross-play between PlayStation 4 and PC in Rocket League. It's called PSYNet Rocket League. I play Rocket League a lot on my PlayStation 4, and every game you are matched with players on the same network with the PlayStation 4. Best wishes to you guys. I will write you more later with more questions and stuff, so and so on. So, Don, thanks for the email.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
back on the scene.
This is Gamertag Radio.
Have you guys tried this? The, you know, PlayStation 4, PC, Rocket League online? Because I haven't.
I have not, unfortunately.
I have not either.
Okay. Well, any listeners out there, let us know if you have. And tell us, how was that experience? Was it smooth, fun, and so on? Let us know. But shout out to Don for the email. I believe we have more voicemails. Which voicemail you guys want me to play next?
Let's do number two.
All right, let's go with number two.
Hello, this is David from Baltimore, and I'd like to ask that we all saw Mass Effect Andromeda, but I heard there were rumors that, you know, Rockstar was going to show their next new game, but what ever happened to that and all that? I'd like to thank y'all for following my questions, and keep up with the good work on the show. Thanks.
Thanks, David, for calling in. I know Strauss Zelnick has said in the past that there's two primary permanent titles for Rockstar, and it's Grand Theft Auto and Red Dead Redemption. And at this point, honestly, all we've really seen is an alleged leaked map and alleged leaked image. There's been a couple of like LinkedIn updates, and you know, people have been practically assuming for the best. Rumors were supposed to be at E3, Gamescom afterwards, but they never showed up. And it was a last minute nix from the PlayStation technical showcase last week, where they unveiled the PS4 Pro. Some people are saying that was a rumor, but I think the rumor has gotten a lot more legs since, because we've got people from different media outlets who have heard from their sources, and confirmed, just unable to release the information, that they were supposed to do a Red Dead Redemption unveiling, but for some reason they backed out last minute and said, no, we're not going to do it. It's Sony's, you know, it's Sony's show, so they can do, I'm sure they probably said, you know, we're just going to release, you know, just Sony information. We don't want to try and steal any thunder away from any of the hardware stuff. I really think that a Red Dead Redemption 2 title is in the works. We've got way too many, I don't want to say leaks, but too many mistakes done via, you know, either artist websites or LinkedIn updates, where people have, you know, accidentally put that information in there. There's actually an artist that had a whole bunch of like facial renderings from, you know, cowboys and Indians and various. And then as soon as that information hit the internet, all of a sudden, all that information was removed from the artist's website. I think it was an artist from, used to work at Crytek or something like that, that was now, you know, working on, allegedly, on the game. So I really do think that Red Dead Redemption 2 is going to come. When it's going to arrive, I don't know. I think it's been, 4 years now since the original came out, which, in my opinion, is probably for the best. Let them take their time. We've seen what's happened, and I think we talked about this on the last show. We've seen what happens when companies take their time with releasing. A perfect example, and we probably harp on this every show, is The Witcher. Witcher, you know, they took, 5 years to come out, and we've seen the results. And I think, you know, and talking about Project Red, Cyberpunk 2077, we've heard that. It's probably up there in the levels of vaporware, right? But it's not vaporware. It'll eventually hit the market. It's going to come out. And I'd take the time. Please take the time. We've seen what they've done with all the other Rockstar titles. You know, take your time. Give the gamers what the gamers really want. Take your time, make the good, proper game, and then release it.
Hi, good evening, GTR. This is Zach Mashimoto, finally back in the States. I got a quick question. Do you guys know what the resolution is for the PSVR? And after that Neo presentation today, buying a new TV with the Neo is still cheaper than what I spend on my PC, a rig that gets built every 2 years. All right, thanks. Have a good show. Okay, bye.
All right, thanks for calling in. Concerning VR for the PlayStation VR, I believe it's the 5.7-inch, and it displays at 1920 by 1080. The actual unit itself actually is an OLED display, and its split vertical resolution is 960 by 1080 to each of the eyes. So it is 1080. You can connect it to a 4K and PS4 all you want, but ultimately all these displays, all the VR models typically push out to 1080. I don't think you're going to see anything at 4K for a while.
Paris, let me ask you a question. Do you get to play the PlayStation VR?
No.
During Call of Duty?
I have not. No, remember, I never went. I didn't get a chance to play it. That's the one VR I have yet to try. I have not done PlayStation VR.
I tried it. It gave me a major headache. I got a little bit dizzy. I don't know if it was because of the game or maybe it was just too hot that day or what, but I got sick playing it. I'm not going to lie, man. So, I don't know. Not for me. But
interesting.
I mean, it's not one of those. It's just an add-on. It's not like, and it's plus it's free, so you could actually play that Call of Duty stuff. It's basically, you know, the ship version of the like one of the campaign levels. It's something like that, similar, and you're like fighting other ships. It's like, I don't know. It's not for me, but
yeah, that seems to be the VR du jour, you know, lately, right? Where, you know, it's, oh, we're gonna give you this one, you know, mini chunk of the game, you know, this quick little 5 minute slice of the game and allow you to use VR. I think they're doing it for Arkham and Star Wars and now COD. So I wouldn't be surprised if major AAA titles start to do small VR slices of their games as opposed to full, you know, 8 to 10 hour campaigns in pure VR, which I think would be the ideal or future, you know, future four games. But I think they're doing that in 5 minute or, you know, small chunks just to see where it goes and what fits. I'm starting to see that. And I think that's going to be what we see for the future with VR and major games.
All right. We got this email here from Craig, and he's saying, "Hey, Danny, Paris, and Pete. I just listened to episode 596 regarding the Sony event that was held in New York, and the podcast was dope as always. I agree with everything Paris," see, I emphasize this, everything Paris had to say about Sony's plan to future-proof their business by tiptoeing around 4K now and eventually announcing the PlayStation 5. The one thing I disagree on, and I believe Danny and Pete are right on the mark, is Scorpio's launch price at $399. Here's why. Number one, there is a 14-month gap from now to November 2017, giving Microsoft plenty of time for parts inside of the Scorpio to go down in price. Number two, it will be the only true 4K gaming system for $399 and a huge improvement to what Sony has on the market at the time of Scorpio's launch. The Scorpion.
Scorpion.
Number three, Microsoft has a war chest packed with money and would certainly be willing to break even or take a small loss to take the lead away from Sony, taking back the crown they lost in 2013. Hey, I could be wrong, but Microsoft already caught Sony with their pants down during E3 2016 with revealing two new systems, which is why they didn't show the PlayStation 4 Pro then. The launch price of $399 would be the knockout punch that Microsoft is looking for. By the way, let Danny dream, damn it, your friend Craig. All right. Yep. Thank you, Craig. So I got to address a couple errors right off the top.
Okay.
I don't think Sony was caught with their pants down because they're the ones that got out in front of E3 and said, look, yeah, Neo's real, but we're not going to talk about it right now. When they said that, they didn't have any idea that they were going to announce a Scorpio. I mean, we all knew that the Slim was coming, or the Xbox One S, I should say. But if you look at what the Pro is, they didn't change anything. So I don't really think they didn't panic, is what I'm trying to say. It is what it is. You know what I mean? From all the rumors that we had before E3. So I don't think their pants were caught down. Now, go ahead, Pete. I'm going to say something.
So I think, because of the closeness of the November launch, so unless they had planned or they had the potential or possibility to extend or postpone the release for the Pro, I think with E3 in June being so close to November, 5 months, you need technical lead time to be able to source parts to compile and put these things together and test to make sure that the launch goes successful. I think it's smart for Microsoft to have this a year out because, as Craig says, they need to source the parts enough to supply to support the supply and demand. It was too close for Sony to be able to hit market in November for them to, you know, make a change or do anything with regards to it. So I think November was always their release mark to hit holiday season 2016. Any variance of that would have probably been a bigger downfall or a bigger problem, let's say, for Sony at the end of the day. And I think it does make sense. It gives them a 14-month gap between now and next year for Microsoft. When you're buying products at that large of a quantity, and whether you're actually physically sourcing them in a warehouse or it's, you know, based on future, you know, demand, you're going to get a serious discount on purchasing. So I Sony's still going to get a chunk of that because they are going to have the only Blu-ray player in their boxes anyways. But I still stand by, and I think Microsoft is going to price that at 400, price match it with a bigger, better device, doing true 4K gaming. 350, I think Danny's on the wacky tobacky.
No, $349,
$399. Okay. Before I got to address the price thing, but I got to go to one other thing because I've been waiting to rant about this one. he puts in all caps that the Scorpio is a true 4K gaming system. You don't know that. You only know what Microsoft told you, like you just said, 14 months out of whenever the system comes out. We don't know if every game on this system is going to be native 4K. What we do know is it's going to have 6 teraflops. Tell me something else about Scorpio. You can't, because that's all they told you. And they promised true 4K. And I'm not saying it won't be, but all I'm saying is this. People are making huge assumptions with Scorpio way too early in the process. We have yet to see a dev kit. We have yet to see an actual game. And when I say a game, I'm talking a AAA game running on Scorpio dev kits or Scorpio hardware. Until then, this is freaking vaporware. And I don't care what no one says. You can be mad. You can be as mad as me. You can be as mad as me as you want to be. But this is vaporware. PlayStation 4 Pro is tangible. It's real. We've seen games running on dev kits for it now, so we know exactly what it is. We've seen the actual specs of the system, so we can realistically talk about it. Until we get to 2017 and Microsoft actually starts talking specs of Scorpio and we see games running on Scorpio, it's freaking vaporware. And the reason I bring that up is the price. I know they say 6 teraflops. Yes, he is correct that, you know, talking about it now, they have time. Prices of tech is going to go down. If they hit 390, I'll say this. If they hit 399, that true 4K gaming native stuff, I refuse to believe it will be. As we sit here today, I refuse to believe that's what it's going to be. I think this thing's going to be $500, in my personal opinion, because if they're going to really go all out and make this the hardware monster that we think it's going to be, you can't hit that at $400. And I know he brought up, oh, they got the war chest and da da da, they'll take a loss. You know, look, my math, I'm not good at math, okay? But I'll say this.
Yeah.
Whoops, I did it wrong. I was going to do a calculator. I'm dumb. But my point is...
Live on the podcast. Hey, congratulations. Hey,
yeah, I know. It's great.
They got to stay
in. No, it has to stay in. But my point is, if let's just say Scorpio is the monster that we think it's going to be, right? And that the parts of it, just to make the thing per unit, is $500, right? You're really going to tell me that Microsoft is willing to take a $100 loss?
Hey. Well, they did in the first console.
Let's say there's 20 million Scorpio units. That's a low number, to be honest, because it'll probably sell more than that. Let's say there's 20 million Scorpios that are sold at a $100 loss. Do the math. You really think Microsoft is going to do that?
Sony did it for 5 years with the PlayStation 3 before they hit the profit.
First console did it.
Well, yeah, PlayStation 3 did it because they had no choice after they launched it at $600 and no one was buying it. So then they just started slowly lowering the price down to be realistic. I'm saying you're talking at launch. Let's be even more realistic. At launch, let's say that first holiday, 8 million people buy the Scorpio at a $100 loss at 8 million. You really think they're going to do that?
I'm confident that they are, but that's just me. And lower the price of Xbox One S next year to $249.
So from what I'm reading, it allegedly the Xbox One S manufacturing cost per unit is $324. So they're already taking a $25 hit on the Xbox One S, remember, they're making money hand over fist with Xbox Live. And plus, you know, whatever market share they get from, you know, whether it's addition, you know, whether it's Paris's favorite Kinect, additional controllers,
the games.
You know, the games itself. So they're probably already taking a loss. So why wouldn't they do that with Scorpio?
$100 loss? You really think they're going to take $100? You both of you are insane.
Well, remember, so the most expensive part of the Xbox One S is probably the CPU/GPU. I don't know if it's a combined thing, but it's about $100 a pop. You know, and that's that custom 16-nanometer AMD chip. It's probably going to be a little bit bigger, that cost, because, you know, they need to be able to support this 4K gaming initiative. I don't know. I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised. So, just to simply slam the door just to shove it to Sony, I would not be surprised.
Okay, again, because, you know, I can't do the math, so I did the calculator while you were talking. So you're telling me that, let's just say 8 million. 8 million units are sold at $100 loss per unit. Microsoft is willing to take an $800 million loss just to win.
Yes.
You're insane. Both of you are insane.
You know why? You know why? Because here's one thing, and you could go back to the archive and listen to one of the interviews that we had with Michael Pachter. What was the first thing that he said? He goes, Microsoft only cares to be number one. They do anything that it takes to be number one.
So Microsoft is willing to lose $1 billion off the top. Let's just round it up. They'll lose $1 billion off the top to prove a point.
They did it with the first console, Paris. Why won't they do it again?
Why not just sell it at 500, break even, and still sell your 8 million units that you were going to sell anyways? Because the hardcore crowd's going to buy it regardless, and then wait till next holiday to start cutting the price down.
It all depends. Look, I understand where you're coming from, but it all depends on the fans, too. The fans of Xbox. Like, are you willing to pay $499, let's say $500, whatever, just to get Scorpio next year?
You know,
or you will just buy the $249 or $299 Xbox One S next year and just play that, or just stay with the PC version, and that's it. It's up to you. Personally, I think that they're gonna have that console cheaper. I just it will be dumb for them to have it $499, because if they really want to compete with Sony, and also we don't know what Nintendo's doing by the time their new console comes out sometime next year, they're going to compete and they're going to have a console for cheap. They can't have it for the most expensive console out there. It just doesn't make sense to do that.
By the way, Paris, that price, that $324, is based on the 2 terabyte Xbox One S. Okay. So that's just what that whole thing is. And there's, if people are really interested and really want to go through this, there's a company called IHS Market. I believe the website URL is technology.ihs.com. And you can go and see what the bill of materials or breakdown is. It even goes down so far as to insertion costs, which is what it takes to compile and put the unit together before it hits market. So, you know, we're talking $312 for the physical box, $12 to compile and assemble, and so it comes out to $324 per Xbox One S 2 terabyte version. All right, so it's just, you're going to see some variances when you go to the 1 terabyte or the 500 gig version. So you want to do the math? If you don't even have to do the math, Paris, it does it for you here on this website. So if you want to go and see,
no calculator,
no calculators for Paris. You just read it; it's already done for you. So you can see what the Xbox 360 did, what the Xbox One, what the Xbox One S, and see, you know, what the potential price. Obviously, we can't see what Scorpio is going to do because they haven't unleashed or revealed any of the hardware that's going to be inside it. But don't be surprised. Don't be surprised if they actually do that.
I'm gonna reference a couple things here, and then I'm gonna
shut up.
Wow. All right. First and foremost, don't forget Phil Spencer, out of his own mouth, off of those emerald lips, he said this is a premium product and will be priced as such. Just remember that. That's all I'm saying on that. Secondly, they can get away with charging $499 for this thing early on because of, and God bless him because I love him. It's, you know, our friend Southbound, who we met at E3 and everything, is on Twitter. You know, they do a podcast, you know, dude, you cut him open and just emerald gems just fall out of him because that's how much
he does sip from the emerald chalice pretty hard
because he loves some Xbox and there ain't nothing wrong with that. I say it in jest because I love him. But the point is this. He will spend $500 and you can't tell me there's not 8 million other people out there globally that would spend the same thing at launch. Of course they would.
Yeah. I'm not saying
not in Temecula though.
No, but the point is this, if Scorpio is truly what they said it was at E3 and it's this powerhouse that does native 4K, you know, I don't think they'll hit 60 frames per second, but let's just say crazy enough they do. 4K native, 60 frames per second on their games, the VR options, all that stuff. And they say it's $500, thing will fly off shelves. It'll fly off shelves at launch. So why would you undercut yourself at launch? By, hey, let's just take a $1 billion loss because we want to win. They're not going to do that. No way.
Look, 450 max.
See, minimum. Daddy's changing his stance yeah, I know. Now.
hey, Danny.
Stick to your guns, Danny.
Hey, Danny. Follow your dreams.
Follow your
wallet. I'm always following my dreams, man. Always. By the way, all right. Very quick, Paris. I know we running out of time. Very quick. I know we have one more voicemail to play. I know you posted an article on our chat about, was it the nail in the coffin of Xbox One or something like that, the PlayStation Pro?
Yeah, and like I even said, ignore the title because, dude, that's another thing. All the freaking clickbait articles that came out this week. Oh, yeah. Sony's gonna charge you to patch the 4K, and it's like, no, it's like we love to say, you know, on our chat, read. That is not what he was saying, and then Sony had to retract that. Look, they screwed up on the Bethesda thing and the mods. I give them that, but again, this article you're talking about. Take the title out of it. It's basically to just talk to a bunch of different industry people like Michael Pachter and some other people that, you know, they project what things are going to do. Some of them thought PlayStation 4 Pro was going to be this great seller. Some of them didn't, you know, so it's a very wait and see. I will be very curious to see what that thing does this holiday, because I think, like I said earlier, having a 4K TV with HDR is a big seller in people wanting to get a PlayStation 4 Pro, and even next year with the Scorpio. So a lot of that adoption. So like, I think Black Friday, I think 4K TV prices are going to plummet because they're going to be pushing them off shelves because of these new consoles. So, you know, it's going to be so interesting to see what happens. Right.
So we have one more voicemail. We're going to play it right now.
What's up, Gamertag guys? This is Johnny Boy. So I was thinking, you got the PS4 Pro announced, and you know, there's mixed feelings about it. I personally don't really too much care. I'm kind of just waiting for that Scorpio. But there were a lot of people praising it for the price. But do we not like forget that just like what, a week or so ago, the PSN price went up $10 a month if you're paying that way. Would that not like help mitigate the price, you know, for Sony? Is that something they would do? And could we see something like that happen on the, you know, Xbox side for the Scorpio? You know, you guys are saying it, or at least Paris is saying that it'll probably be expensive. And would we care if, you know, Xbox Live went up $10 a month or so, and you know, to get a lower price on the Scorpio? All right. Later, guys.
All right. So he wants to know, you know, about the whole PlayStation Plus price going up and everything. Do you think it's going to be the same with Xbox Live because of Scorpio?
No.
Personally, I don't think so.
Well, right? Wait. According to your freaking dream, they better do it because they're about to take a $1 billion loss.
But I never say anything about the price of Xbox Live. That never came from my mouth. Where were
they? I think the I think the
Paris, you're a punk.
I don't think Microsoft's going to do that. Microsoft is in PR repair mode still, I think. And I don't think...
Oh, come on. Can we just let that go? Don't tell me you're going to bring up 2013 again, man.
They are.
Are you?
They Why are. They're still. So they're still in that, PR man. Maintenance mode. They don't want to take any more L's.
Just do it.
Let it go.
Let Microsoft
Let
dream.
Let it go.
Let Microsoft dream.
No, no, no. They. That was a nightmare. That wasn't even a dream. That was a nightmare. Okay.
Let it go.
Let it go. And just, yo, we're in a new era right now, man. 2013, $3.99, $4.99. Let it go.
Hey, Danny.
What?
Just let Phil Spencer follow his dreams.
Let Phil follow his dream.
Let Phil dream.
Let Phil dream. Oh, my God. Let Phil dream. Hell yeah. Oh, my God.
Oh, you know what? One of our listeners, some of you have to be amazing with Photoshop. Can we get, if any of you guys follow us on Twitter, there's this sloth, follow your dream thing. Some of y'all, I know y'all have the abilities and skills to do this on Photoshop. Can one of you guys please swap out and put Phil Spencer's head on that?
Yeah, and or share something. Or do a let Phil Spencer dream, you know, a nice meme, a nice little picture. That would be hilarious. I'll die laughing.
That happens.
Please surprise us.
I'm dead. I'm done. Dead.
That has to happen. You know what? I'm looking, I still have a Far Cry Primal for Xbox One. It'll be actually a perfect somebody send it, and whoever's got the best version of it, I'll send you a copy of Far Cry Primal
for Xbox One. You go.
Whoa. I have to pause on this. Like, again, what Johnny Boy's thinking, I really don't think Microsoft would do that at all. But again, we're talking about holiday and these crazy bundles. Literally Walmart right now, you can get the Xbox One S 500 gigabyte version with a 4K Blu-ray movie of your choice and the Elite controller for $390.
Holy woo.
Where?
Walmart.
Damn, I was just there
yesterday. That's what I'm saying, dude.
I was just there yesterday.
There are going to be some gangster deals this holiday for all this stuff, man. Wow. So, Black Friday is going to be nuts.
All right, so right now we're going to play this audio that I recorded during Call of Duty XP. I was there with a couple of journalists. We had a roundtable Q&A with the senior producer of Call of Duty Infinite Warfare. His name is Jack O'Hara. And listen to this Q&A roundtable and enjoy. And we'll be right back after this.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Back on the scene.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
Yep. And yeah, let's get that going on. I have talked with a few of the players, and they told me just after an hour or 1 hour and a half playing time, it is, their feeling is slower, sliding is much less sliding, the jumps are less high, it's true.
Yeah.
Really?
So you're talking percentage points.
Talking feeling.
Yeah.
The guys.
Yeah.
The guys told me it feels a little bit slower, less sliding, and less high jumping.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. It's a very conscious decision to just dial it down a little bit.
That would be my question now. Yeah. Why?
Mainly because when you're having engagements where you're, you know, one of the biggest problems you identify is people getting outside of the field of view. You don't want to have an engagement where, you know, if the majority of engagements is somebody seeing, like looking down on you and you can't see them, then it ends up being a very frustrating experience to die from these unknown angles, etc. So kind of bringing everything down just that little bit, it makes the tempo of the game a little bit more, gives you time for your brain to register. This is a dramatic music for it kind of helps the engagement stay more focused, more concentrated, and kind of leads to a more satisfying experience, in our opinion. Another example I'll give you is at some point we had during Ghost, we had a much shorter respawn time. So every time you got killed, you would watch yourself die for like 0.5 seconds, and we did work to shorten that duration by letting you queue up the kill cam. So the time between death, between respawns, is really fast, and that led to there's no time for your brain to register and take a break. So just by increasing that to 0.75 seconds, you get people actually get it like, oh, I acknowledge what happens, I understand who shot me, and then the game feels better to them. So we're really talking like tiny little numbers, and it just changes the feeling. Yeah.
0.5, now it's 0.75.
Yep.
Brain?
Yeah, yeah, people register. Yeah,
brain,
yeah. It makes a difference. Like, it might be like 4 or 5 deaths in a match.
Yeah.
And it's just that little extra, like, oh, that guy shot me, he's there, and it takes a little, you know, it just makes that a little extra step.
Talking about percentages, just, sorry, last question. You're all finished, right? the jumps are cut by what? 0.5% or
no, that's a little bit more. That's a little bit more. I, off the top of my head, I mean, it's very hard to test these things and do like a hey, take it down 20% because it's too violent. You need to always dial it down a little bit. Play, we play test every day, like 1 hour every morning. The whole multiplayer team plays, and then 1 more hour in the afternoon. So it's kind of like adjust a little bit, play test 2 or 3 matches because it takes time for you to register.
So you get a tighter experience.
Yeah, exactly.
The
outcome is to make the engagements, the time to the engagement and that actual engagement itself feel a little bit more consistent, as opposed to necessarily being surprised and you know, the other person getting the advantage because they have the higher ground, for example.
Everyone, headshot, guy over there, whatever.
I don't have to
think very much. It's cool.
How much of this was driven by a desire to accommodate a casual audience, or was it more to accommodate an esports audience?
Both. It's just more of a wanting the game to be to be its own game, basically. You don't want to be a carbon copy. So it's about the game having its feel and about us feeling like, you know, when we, and everything works in synergy together. So when you're adjusting movement, it also has impact on the layout of the maps and the structure, where you're placing any wall runs, where your engagements are, how long they are, how long it takes you to get there. Like you'll see in Call of Duties with the average speed going up over the last few games, maps have gotten slightly larger to accommodate for that, you know, somebody being able to run faster, so be able to get to a place faster. And all those things kind of work in combination together to make the feel of the game, because you can have the best wall running in the world, the best, you know, animation and et cetera, but if all the places you use it in a map are very frustrating because you're just running into a wall or something like that, then it's all in vain kind of thing. So all those systems have to kind of work together to create the feel of the game, essentially.
What about having like a playlist for also a casual gamer that are not that great players? something like that.
Well, you get a little bit of that. Like, people end up matching against people of their own skill bucket. I mean, it's very hard. Like, when you talk about, you know, a Call of Duty having 30 million people, it's very hard to define somebody as being casual when, you know, they've played 40 hours of multiplayer versus somebody else who's played 500. Certainly this person's paid more, but 40-hour investment of time is certainly not casual in my mind. Do you know what I mean? So it really becomes hard to necessarily put people in a bucket. And I would say that the Call of Duty audience, after playing our games for 10 years, have really started to feel a certain sense of ownership to those games that certainly gets reflected in any kind of feedback or any kind of feelings and deciding what they like and don't like about the games. And all those kinds of things just end up being where it's very hard to define, hey, this category is player is casual, because the casual nowadays might be somebody who just plays 10 hours, but they've also played for the last 5 years. So they certainly know how to use a controller and et cetera. Yeah.
The mission teams, mm-hmm. which was somewhat briefly introduced the other day.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about what that meant? Because to me, just to premise the question, to me it seemed like a way of accommodating different playstyles, putting people into different, maybe even different lobbies.
No, it's not different lobbies. You're still matching with other people, but the mission teams are basically each one of them has their own personality. Tied has their own commander with a different voice, a different personality, and they're also tied to different style, like you said, styles of gameplay, but also game modes. So you get the first one that's meant to kind of help people come on board, and especially, you know, some of the more casual audience, we give them, when we say casual, I mean like people who this might be their first Call of Duty, we give them the mission teams, the commander will give you a mission that might be, the first one might be get 3 kills in this match. And if you get the 3 kills, then your objective is complete, and at the end of the match you get, you know, a reward. And so as you start unlocking these mission teams, we want to try encouraging people, like, you know, obviously if they really don't want to, they don't want to, but we would like to promote a place where they're playing different game modes and consuming more of the content, because we'll often see people stay siloed in team deathmatch and not want to go outside of that, and we want to kind of encourage them by saying, hey, go capture 3 domination points during a match and try that out. So it's just kind of a way of gently easing people towards trying the other stuff that they might not necessarily do in the first place.
A quick follow-up, if I may. So what does the mission teams offer players who are 200 hours into the game?
So that's when you start getting into the more hard, you know, in this case, I will say hardcore mission teams, where you might be getting something, a mission that might be get a kill of the while the person is in the air and you're also in the air. Or, you know, get a kill... I'm trying to remember another one. There was one which was get 10 kills without dying, for example. That's one of the less imaginative ones, but we have a few that just kind of tweak your interest and get you to try different things, basically.
And that's based by one person making that? Or the whole group, the whole team?
No, it's just each individual has their own, okay, has their own mission.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. We want to keep it so that each person has their little mini objective, but okay, they keep playing. And we try to not put any challenges in that might be like get 10 kills while prone, because then people will just lie prone. So try and avoid and stay away from those, and get something where it's engaging them in the gameplay.
Okay.
Understanding. Mm-hmm. So I'm going in the lobby, say I want to play multiplayer.
Yeah.
I don't have a local group.
Yeah.
Give me, match me with 3 other guys, whatever. And then there's an extra point, this a mission commander? I choose it for myself.
You choose it for yourself. Yeah.
And the other 3 can choose it also?
Yeah, they can be. They can do whatever. Yeah.
Only I can see my.
Yeah, correct. Yeah,
not exactly. The whole group.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like for learning and for getting deeper in the game.
Then,
what are the rewards for it? Can you name one?
Yeah, there'll be some guns. You get rewards, like, so each mission team kind of ranks up. So let's say you accomplish a set of 10 missions, you'll eventually get a reward for it, which might be a gun, it might be a camo or that kind
of upgrade too.
I mean, it's just basically a way of a secondary progression system that's independent of the main one, but functions as a way of like promoting different behaviors in the game.
How many different mission teams do you imagine that there will be available at any given time?
Well, once they unlock as you progress down the standard player progression, so you'll start off with 1. I think at launch we're aiming for 4, and perhaps more to come.
I was going to ask that question.
Because they're mission teams, they're based around the lore around them is based around taking elements from the single player campaign. We can't take necessarily the exact same character, because that's just breaking the continuity of the story. So we created some squads. So, for example, we have the Orion Initiative, where it's like a squad that's based on the UNSA faction from there, and they're kind of just they're taking these missions on as a group, and then you go accomplish them for them. So,
I see. Well, because it sounds like me, like a professional trainer or a personal trainer, more like a personal trainer than a mission team. The naming is quite confusing for me.
Yeah, that's all.
Well, the first time I heard like that, I thought it was everybody working together
to accomplish.
Yeah, that's why it was confusing. Yeah,
gotcha.
Right.
I see.
So it's called mission teams, but it's my personal commander.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, now I understand.
Gotcha.
Great.
So combat rigs remind me strongly of the specialists, Black Ops 3, but with a lot more customization.
Yeah.
What was the inspiration behind the rigs, and what can you do with them?
So when we started off down the road of making combat rigs, this was, 2-3 years ago, and the main thing we wanted to do is kind of isolate and distill the play styles that we see in the general population. Obviously, not everyone fits in the exact box, but we wanted to take... So, you know, for example, the Warfighter is based around the mid-range combat, mid-range run and gunner. Then you're going to have the Striker, which is more of a team-based, helping your teammates kind of archetype. And then the Phantom is around the stealth. The FTL is that's one's my favorite. It's more the guerrilla-style tactics, a little bit more stranger stuff happening. And then the Synaptic, which is pure run-and-gun speed-based. And then you have the Merc, which is based around a class of players that like to play defensively, maybe a little bit slower, with some occasional bursts of combat, and especially around like game modes with objectives like domination, etc. So taking these play styles, and what we wanted to do is our fiction is that it's basically you wearing the suit. It's a piece of equipment that's reinforcing your playstyle. And we want to give people the choice to find, to customize the gameplay, not just, you know, the way they look, but actually customize what's happening to them in game. So in the case of the Merc, for example, if you're more, you're a little bit defensive, but you're a little bit more, you like to attack sometimes, you can equip his combat ability, which is the Bull Charge, where he pulls out the shield, starts sprinting slowly, and if he hits anyone, they go flying off into the distance. If he combines that with, say, his trait, that Man-at-Arms, which lets you carry an LMG and move at a slightly higher speed than if you had an LMG without it, kind of promotes a defensive-style play, but with a little bit of offensiveness in these bursts of moment where he's going to activate the Bull Charge, take a point, or try and counter the enemy. We really, like I said, you know, we see these trends in the population. You know, mobile mid-range is 30% of the population, but you also know that no one can fit in one exact box. So you want to have blurred lines in between where people can kind of choose to mix and match and get synergies. So, for example, the FTL guy, one of his combat abilities is FTL jump, which is a small range teleport. And if you combine that with his trait that drops super bags that when you pick them up, they recharge your energy, then you'll be able to kind of combine the two and get teleporting a little bit more. Since it's not a lethal ability, we want you to be able to use it for tactical positioning. Like maybe I'll get a kill and there's a second guy coming and I can use to escape. So we really want to provide this depth of engagement on the gameplay customization.
Real cool.
Going off the rigs, in sort of picking these playstyles and these abilities, is there any sort of playstyle or ability that you felt was too crazy, maybe too sci-fi, that got cut?
Yes. We started off the game, like you'll see also, we have a lot more equipment, and the equipment has much more varied usages that it's traditionally had in our games. There's even a few that weren't in the game. We have another one coming, which is the deployable cover that you throw it down and a small wall of foam comes up that you can take cover behind. We started off by prototyping a lot of different ideas, and some which were amazing for the person using them, but terrible for everybody else. So once we had that large pool and we kind of weeded out the ones that just we knew were never going to work, we kind of selected the ones that we felt we could bring to a quality level and to a balance level that didn't, you know, negatively impact the experience, basically.
And going off of that, my favorite, like, ultimate attack was the Reaper one from the Synaptic. And I just wanted to know, like, what influenced that? Was it the recent news about Harambe that influenced that?
Yeah, this is probably about a year and a half ago or something that. So I think
it's a social commentary. What is your stance on
that? No comment on that. No, the Reaper came from looking, like when we started to put robots in the game, and we have a concept artist called Aaron Beck who worked on Elysium and things like that. And when he started helping with designing the robots, the first thing that struck the mind was like, why do they have to move like humans? And there's no particular reason except for anthropomorphically, we make them in our image because that's what we think they should look like, right? But there's no reason a robot should move like a human when there's no limitations on joints and power or spines or bones or organs or anything like that. So the idea came of like, what if he moved in a radically different way, something you've never seen in Call of Duty, that would be really surprising to players and provide that really cool engagement for, you know, you get it mid-match and then you're going to you're going to have your little moment, the crescendo that it comes up, and then it's over, and then you return to
the gameplay. It was an amazing moment. I was definitely like, what is happening to me right now?
Yeah, the reaction is usually there's some swear words involved, but when people first see it, they're like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
So.
Kind of going off that, in terms of the aesthetics of especially the player characters, if we go back to Ghosts, one of the big things was that you introduced that you could both play as a man or a female. And then in Advanced Warfare, everything became anonymized. And then in Black Ops 3, there were all these characters. And now we're back to kind of anonymized characters again. Was that a conscious design choice?
Yeah, absolutely. We wanted to... since the idea was that the combat rigs are the equipment that you're wearing, we explored the idea of doing the different types of bodies, but it became obvious that with the amount of armor that's on them, etc., that there's no particular reason for it to be a different shape just because it's a woman. So they're kind of gender neutral, and you'll see throughout the mission commanders that get introduced to you, a couple of them are women that will be wearing the same combat rig as you, to just kind of reinforce that point that it could be anyone in that suit. It's not a burly dude necessarily. The same thing happens when you're playing. Like, you'll see every class of characters, you'll hear female voices, you'll hear male voices, just to kind of reinforce that point that these are gender neutral. And we kept them, we wanted the face masks just to continue that, sticking with the fiction that it's supposed to be yourself in the suit.
So everyone's Samus, you just don't know what's inside.
Yes.
Okay, I'll go for it. Going back to the esports, because that's a big thing. In Black Ops, you can choose between maps your specialists, that's right. Now, I tried it. You can, in one map, in one game, you can choose the next respawn, another rig with another payload, another trait.
Yeah.
You think that will be good on esports, or will it be a bad function? Because what would be going on if everybody could, switch whatever? Or is it a good thing?
Well, we're not discussing the details of esports just yet. I will say that we asked some pro players from both US and EU to come play the game with the studio, give us their feedback, and discuss their thoughts on the various, like, ban and protect, pick and ban, and all those kinds of systems, so that we can get to... we really want to support esports and help them make a spectacle that's amazing to watch for everybody. So we'll have some more announcements for it soon, but right now we're just continuing with the
information. But for you can...
Correct. Yeah.
One game, one match. You can choose whatever you want. Like, you can get out of the ring.
Yeah.
Is there any advantages to that?
It's actually a disadvantage if you don't time it correctly. So if you were to wait till your super's full and then switch rig, you lose your super. So you've actually put yourself at a disadvantage. So the main reason for it was wanting. A little bit of flexibility, the idea being, you know, it's equipment, so you're just changing your equipment, and that you can provide a variety of tactics, because especially on longer team-based modes that are game modes with objectives, you're going to end up with potentially a lot more interesting combinations, which are, you know, hey, what if a team suddenly switches because they've been triple capped and they need to take them back and they don't want to, they're just not able to. So they're going to try and change up the tactics and see if they can take back that point by surprising the enemy with a different configuration. In practice, we see people slowly start to use it. It's certainly not something that people are used to. So they just kind of, people are just wrapping their heads around it and starting to use it more and more, right? So we're excited to see what comes out of those tactical changes.
It's right, yeah. You can one map you can change wherever you respawn until the time's up.
What do you mean, like,
until the time from the game is up? Okay.
Well, I think the question was for clarification. Yeah. You can change rig mid map.
Correct.
Okay, so it's
new. You
make my game
different.
All right. So what's changed about the chain movement system? Is it similar to Black Ops 3, or is there a whole new layer to it?
So we spent a lot of time talking to the Treyarch guys. We went down and talked to the Overwatch guys. Helps to be under the big umbrella of Activision. So we kind of caught up with them and saw where a lot of their philosophies were in terms of movements and what they were doing. And it's kind of, so like I said, we got very close to it, and then we kind of dialed it back in the places that we felt we needed to for our map design in order to keep the engagements crafted the way we wanted to. But the main thing from talking to everybody was just the sense that it's not just the base speed of the animation, like how fast you're walking through the world. It's really the combination of everything from the speed at which you reload your magazine to the movement when you bring your gun up in ADS. Like even doing things like, you know, putting a little bit of motion and settle at the top of the ADS starts to disturb players because it's not quite as snappy as they want. So really, when we talk about movement and all those things, it's such an umbrella that involves 50 to 100 people working together to kind of get to the feeling you want in the game.
Question. We asked this question before. We had a mentor and nobody could answer this question. Yeah. But is there going to be dedicated servers for PC gamers?
You mean rent a server, right? That's what the question's asking.
Yeah.
I can't confirm that one right now.
Okay, all right. That's number two.
you mentioned Overwatch. Mm-hmm. Are there any like other video games that like you took influence from, or you guys all like basically like, I don't know, like any movies that you guys watched a lot while you were developing? Like,
yeah, I mean, there's hundreds. Like the guys, yeah, we play practically everything. You know, I'm mainly a PC gamer. Obviously I play the Call of Duties on console and on PC. There is a wide range of varieties, like at any time and any day people have opinions about hundreds of different games, really. And we're usually up to date on all the latest movies and things like that. Like everybody watches it, especially when it came time around to go into space. You know, people dusted off the old classics, the Aliens, the, you know, Alien versus Predators, well, that's not so much, anyway. even the Star Warses and, you know, just going back to what we all watched and enjoyed as a kid and just kind of trying to pick out all the things that made it special for us.
Cool. Yeah. I thought there was a slight similarity with the Black Flag Retribution, some aesthetic areas.
Yeah.
Just a few.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had a different question about game types.
Yeah.
Going back to especially esports. Mm-hmm. Ghosts had a mixed reception in the esports community.
Yeah.
And one of the things that was notably missing from Ghosts was a hardpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And then you guys brought in a lot of interesting new like game modes.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I've noticed was missing from Infinite Warfare was Blitz.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's still in there somewhere.
Oh, is it? It wasn't in the list I saw.
Yeah.
But all right, but was there like a conscious decision to make sure that you have all the tried and tested game modes?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like when we set off, like we look at the most popular esports game modes, you know, like the Uplink, for example, and Hardpoint, and we wanted to make sure we support them because we want the, you know, there's so many new things in the game that for esports it actually helps to have something that stays consistent to help with that transition between games. We did add Team Defender, which is the new ball game mode, which kind of, the more you play it, it starts to get interesting. If you have the ball and you can't shoot and the other person is about to attack you, I can throw you the ball and then you can't shoot and then I can, so there's lots of combinations and it kind of gets, that one gets really fun. So we're hoping it gets picked up and gets used a lot. But yeah, apart from that, like those are the esports ones. But then we obviously want to support our core game modes, you know, your TDM, Domination, Search and Rescue. But then we're also experimenting with brand new game modes that we'd like to bring across.
So you said Team Defender.
Team Defender, yeah.
Wasn't it just called Defender?
It's called Defender
and
in the menu.
Team Defender back in Modern Warfare 3 was a similar-ish?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. This one's, it's called Defender in the menus. It's kind of based on a lot of the similarities, but we mainly came from it from looking at Uplink and the way people were interacting. And just that interaction of one team chasing each other across the map and then resetting to the middle kind of thing.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
Are supply drops and Call of Duty points going to be back?
We're not going to comment on that one just now. The main currency we're talking about is salvage at the moment, which is the currency that you accrue from playing in-game that you can then use to craft weapons.
else.
So three lane maps, right? That's going to happen this time around again?
Yeah, there's
yeah, so what was the decision in doing that? Like, is it like just you guys prefer it? The community liked it? Was there something that?
A bit of everything. The main thing we want to make sure is that we have variety in the maps. Like, we don't want to have just one type. So we have really strong three lane maps. Then we have some smaller scale maps like Frontier, which are more of a close gun, run and gun, you know, lots of tight corners and 90 degree angles kind of thing. Then we have our strong three lane maps. We also have one map that's more of a kind of circular one. The main idea was to have variety, because as people play, you know, hundreds of hours, you really want to have the opportunity to play in different styles of maps and find the ones which you like. And you know, we're bringing back Terminal as our pre-order map, which doesn't follow any of the recent Call of Duty map design rules. It just lived back then. So we've had to massage it to account for advanced movement, because the first time it was hilarious the first time we played it, but it was a little bit brutal in that people could cross the map in 2 seconds just by double jumping through a window, and then here I am. So it's been a lot of fun adapting that one back and kind of, you know, adding some fat around the edges to account for the faster speed, and really just trying to get that keep that core experience that everybody remembers and remembers Terminal, but still have the fresh gameplay in it.
When the energy weapons were, when you guys talked about the energy weapons the other day, something was said about new damage mechanics, which I didn't quite get. Can you explain
that? That's probably Joe talking about the damage shells. It's more about the range of fall off on the guns and how that trajectory of... So Joe wrote himself a bunch of tools that basically exposes graphs, all the different numbers, because there's about, you know, 100 different settings to tune on every gun. And it's all about the... I don't want to speak too much in detail about it, because I feel like I might say something wrong, or out of ignorance. But he tuned it a lot. So it's shelf damage is in, you know, we tune against at this distance, it takes 4 bullets to kill, for example. And then if you exceed that distance, then it's going to take 5 bullets to kill. So you go down the shelf, and then you go down a further one, the more the distance increases. And it gives you a slightly more... predictable engagements than necessarily having a linear kind of fall off on the damage. So mainly it allows him a lot more simplicity when he's tuning the guns. It's a lot easier to wrap your head around than necessarily saying, oh, if I move within this range, then it may or may not be the bullet that kills me. And that kind of gives you this inconsistent experience as you're running across it.
Then a quick question.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, anybody else?
One thing that I noticed was I really felt when I was playing it that it felt like a mix between, well, some mechanics which you kind of saw in Black Ops 3, but it felt very much like Ghost, with a little bit of the color aesthetics of Advanced Warfare. So kind of like a mix between what we've seen for the last 3 years. But one thing that I really noticed, which was so prevalent in Ghosts, was the sound and how it plays a role in the game in Ghosts, and how I didn't feel that it was the same in the last 2 years, but in Infinite Warfare, like it was just booming, and whenever you were in tight spaces, the echoing in the restaurants was intense.
Yeah, So we did a bunch of efforts, even on this game, improvements versus last one. We now use special tones throughout the maps, volumes, that kind of help replicate the sound, so that if you're within that volume, you're going to get the kind of reverb off things that are happening within the other side of that volume. We do a lot of work with our materials, you know, that if you're walking on carpet, we want you to sound like you're walking on carpet. We're very aware that a lot of players use this to kind of identify where somebody is, how close they are. Especially in esports, it becomes very, very, very used by them. And so when they come in, the first thing they do is like, do you have dead sounds?
So you guys obviously have a different sound studio than...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, completely different. Yeah. I mean, we talk to each other, right? But it's a completely different sound director, sound team. Maybe we might borrow an engineer for a few weeks if we, you know, need some help, or they might borrow one of ours for a bit if they're in a pinch. But generally, the teams are completely separate in terms of audience. So,
cool.
Okay.
All right. If no other questions, thank you very much.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it. You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
So we're going to wrap it up here at Gamertag Radio episode 597. This is a pretty long episode. You know, we had the roundtable discussion with the developer about Call of Duty, Infinite Warfare, and now our, you know, fan mail and everything. And it came out great, man. So remember, post the image of Phil Spencer.
Follow your dream.
And if you could do something, you know, with Paris too, you know, something with P or me, I don't care. Do that. Go.
Yeah,
be
best one. Best one. Surprises. Gets a copy of Far Cry Primal for Xbox One.
Yeah. Surprises, man. Head over to gamertagradio.com, post your comments and feedback, or go to play.it/gamertag. You could also listen to the episodes over there. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, and other podcast directories. Give us a call, 786-273-7GTR. That's 786-273-7GTR. Or email us, fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Or go to speakpipe.com/gamertagradio. You could go there and leave a message there, man. One more thing. I would like to thank everybody that's been supporting and donating to the Indiegogo of The Messengers, a podcast documentary. Right now, we're over 100%, I believe.
Awesome.
105%. So yes, finally we reached the goal, and I have a couple surprises and announcements later, hopefully later this year. But they are going to premiere it first in Orlando, Florida, starting in February 24th or 25th during PodFest. So, you know, any listeners that live around close to the area, let me know. We definitely will hang out and probably will go to the premiere together, man. So definitely keep in touch with that, man. So anything else, Paris, Pete, before we wrap it up?
No, that's
follow it, your dreams. Just might follow your dreams, Danny.
I might have to go to Walmart now.
Go for
it. Oh, wait. Pause on that real quick and keep it short and sweet. So you're going to get a 1S?
I don't know. I gotta look.
You're thinking about it?
I might. I mean, for that price, I might. I just might.
That's not bad, yo.
Yeah.
You know what?
Just to get the 4K Blu-ray, I have to think about it because I don't even have any discs. I don't have a 4K Blu-ray disc, but to have that opportunity, just to have that, may make sense. Plus, you know me, I like white consoles, so.
Whoa, okay. All right. Let me see how Pete gets down.
Let me tell you, last night I had to go to my cousin's birthday party. She was like, oh, bring your Xbox. We'll love to play Rock Band. You know, she's into like karaoke. And so I'm like, yeah, sure. Let me tell you, man, it was a pain in the butt to carry that big console, man, that microwave, man. So, you know, having an Xbox One S would be a lot easier for me to carry around and stuff, you know. So we'll see. That's not a bad price, Paris.
No, it's not at all. It really is not a bad price at all. Hey, look, if I was in the market for a console, Xbox console right now, I would definitely be considering it. Which, if I could say one last thing, I promise I'll shut up. You know, because again, the people mad at me about not having an Xbox. Someone did ask me on Twitter. They're like, hey, if there was a multiplayer game that came out that you would want to play with your son, because, hey, Pete can even attest to this. Shout out to Brian and Kevin and all those guys who were running Destiny last night at Raid with my son. If a multiplayer game came out for Xbox that was only on Xbox that my son and I could play together and we could have fun, would I get an Xbox? And without hesitation, 100%, absolutely I would. If there was a game that my son and I could play together on multiplayer for Xbox, I would get him one for sure because I like playing games with my son. And that's the whole point. I give a crap what console I have as long as I'm having fun. If I need an Xbox to have fun with my son, then I'm getting an Xbox. Bottom line. I hope that helps everybody.
There you go. Follow your dreams, Paris.
Yes.
And developers, make some games to get Paris join the Emerald Movement.
Okay. I can't stop laughing.
I think we're going to wrap it up.
Oh, my God.
I'm done.
I don't know why that's so funny, but it is.
The
I just want to see that. I just want to see that meme now. That meme has to happen. I want to see Phil Spencer with the light.
Yo, guys, the Emerald Movement joined the movement.
Oh, God.
I can't, yo. I'm a tears. I'm a tears, yo. Oh, my God. I'm good. I'm out. Until next time, peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.